What's the name of the podcast, Ethan?
I'm fucking know.
Yeah, it's not a comedy.
It's not going to be a podcast. It's going to be a fucking train wreck.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm one of your hosts, Ethan Bentley, and my other host,
Mitch Coyne. We're joined with Leon Anderson.
How you going, guys?
Thanks for coming on the podcast, mate.
Appreciate it.
You're one of the old school comics kicking around Sydney, Newcastle.
That's right.
I hope you don't find that.
No, not at all. It's actually a privilege to be known as.
Yeah. So Leon's just recently gotten back in comedy. You had was it a 9 year?
11.
11 year hiatus.
Yeah.
That's how to not comedy.
Yeah.
That's straight up, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened with me is I started in 2000 at Christmas 2003. And I went right up to 2010 and stopped because I went through a divorce and my mental health suffered from it. And I just packed my gear and that was the end of it.
You just fucking hit the road.
That's it. Just for a while I had to go away and get well, mate, you know, because I was an alcoholic at the time and I was involved with other things as well. And
One thing leads to another.
Yeah, well, I was on the footy show in 2004 and... I was on there three times, and what happened that night is I went down to Windsor Leagues and had 8 schooners before I went down to Channel 9 at Sydney.
Yeah.
And drank 2 long necks on the way. So I was on the footy show.
You're pretty tidy.
Yeah, no one knew about it, but I was pretty pissed. But that was all about handling nerves and situations like that because, like, it's national television. Yeah. Well, actually, international television because it went to New Zealand as well, you know, so...
International television.
Yeah, international.
Leon Anderson, international television star.
Yeah, big time.
How'd you go? Were you one of those people who could sort of handle themselves and it was okay? Like, people didn't really notice?
Well, yeah, that's right. People didn't really notice that night. I didn't really do comedy a lot like that. It was just like... What it was I'd been doing stand-up for about 8 months at the time. So at best, I was still... like a newcomer in the scene.
So you were 8 months in and on TV.
Yeah, 3 times.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Talk about getting thrown in the deep end.
Yeah.
So that's why
I would have been drinking there. Fucking that many beers too if that had happened to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it was good fun, you know. So at the end of the day, you know, I got what I wanted out of it, you know. And people say to you, oh, did you get paid for it? Did you get paid? But as a new comic, you can't pay for that kind of publicity.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? There's no way. It was terrific.
It's a pity that we don't have those sort of shows anymore as well. There's not a whole lot of, at least as far as I know, I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not a whole lot of TV where comedians can get up and actually do sets.
No, there's not.
Yeah, we don't have Rove Live anymore, which was probably our only tonight show, really, or version of.
Yeah.
And then you had the footy show.
Yep.
And then...
Hey, hey, Saturday had spots on it, didn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
See, Darren Sanders from the Central Coast, he's trying to do a lot to get the Darren Sanders show up and running, but it takes a bit of time and money to do that. He's doing his best as he can, but, you know, he needs some help that way. But, you know, if we can get one of those shows like he's suggesting to do up and running, it'd be terrific. It'd be the stepping stone that new comics need. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this club's doing at the moment, like for newer comics, like local comics.
Yep.
Trying to get people on and give them more spots, get more time on stage. So, yeah, it's been really good here. But, we need more of it.
I haven't graced the stage here yet at Newcastle Comedy Club, and I'm hoping they're going to give me a gig one of these days. But, yeah, I might have to. Do you know anyone who can pull strings?
We can... Put a good word in for you. Come to a couple of the open mics.
Yeah, no, I'm stirring you up, mate, because I know you know the
I've seen you perform, man. You're funny. So yeah,
thank you.
I'm sure they'd have you. But, yeah, it's one of those things. They just need to know you a little bit. So if you just show up eventually.
These open mics get packed in here, like every Tuesday. It's full.
Right.
There's like 50 or 60 people.
Yeah, so, really?
Yeah, if you want to have a good set.
Yeah.
Come
I've
down
got a good set
Tuesday.
Running now. What happened with me, guys, when you first met me, I was back into the scene and I was very rusty. So it doesn't matter what I did 10, 15 years ago. If you take time out of any sport, you've got to go back to day one. So I knew that.
Yeah.
I might have all the jokes in the world, but I've still got the nerves to handle. I've still got the stage presence to handle. I've still got the stage time to work with as well.
Yeah.
So what I've done in the last 12 months is, as much as I could juggling a job as well, full-time job as well, is go back to basics and not be arrogant and say, oh, I was whoever I was back then, because it means nothing at the end of the day being a stand-up comic, you know. Like, if you take time out of sport, you've got to go back to day one.
Yeah, no one cares who you were last week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Like, you could have had a good set last week. If you're not on this week,
that's
then
exactly
you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what the comedy scene's like, you know what I mean? It's a dog-eat-dog world, and that's it. And actually, that's a harsh reality of it, and it's a good family thing, but at the end of the day, if you're a comedian, and this is the truth, comedy owns you, and then your work life and anything, family life and anything else goes around that, because it's very hard, right? And there's so many comics these days compared to when I first started out. And if you're not going to do it, somebody else will.
Yeah, that's right.
And they'll find someone, no worries. So that's
you just got to be better at it than the other person that they're going to find. That's the
yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's funny because you say better at it. It's funny you say it, because I remember I was the third time I was on the footy show was at the Sydney Entertainment Centre. And I remember standing back behind the stage, and I looked behind the counter, and I knew within 5 seconds I was on, because Fatty was introducing me to the stage. And I looked at the crowd, and I looked at the cameras, and I couldn't have cared less.
Yeah.
And then when he introduced me, I went out there and done my set, no dramas. Go to the Sydney Comedy Store 5 days later. There's two dogs and a brown snake in the crowd, and I shoot myself. You know what I mean? You just go to water, you know? It's just funny like that.
Yeah, well, that's what comedy, I did. Mate. I did one of those last Thursday at the Crown and Anchor down there to two people
in
the crowd. Yeah.
Wow.
And eight comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fucking brutal.
I did have the privilege of meeting Rodney Reed once at a gig, and I was a new comic and at the time, and I had been on the footy show, but I walked up to him and I said to him after each show, "How you going, Rodney? I'm Leon. I've started out in comedy too." He leant down on his stage. He said, "Come here, mate." He says, I won't take him off. He said, "Come here, mate." He says, "Comedy is the greatest life you can have." He says, "Do it anywhere and anywhere you can." And he says, "And don't be like these soft cocks that come out on stage and start soft." He says, "Come out strong and get the audience in the palm of your hands, because if you lose them, it doesn't matter what you've got after that, you're not going to pick it back up."
Yeah, I had that last night. I come out fucking weak and just, it went to shit from there.
Yeah, right.
I had a rough one. It was fine.
Like, what happened?
I just started fucking weak. I just didn't have my bit ready to go off the bat. Like, I was running it through my head, and then I got up there and just went, fuck, what am I doing?
You were on the bar and then did a spot.
No. No, that was the week before I was on the bar, which went, I fucking did really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, last night was rough as.
Was it a, had, what was the crowd like?
They were all right. They weren't giving out last for free like last week. So the crowd was a bit harder. But like, as you said, like, if you don't come out of the gate strong.
That's right. But the problem with a lot of comedy rooms, and this is the harsh reality as well, right? If they're not paying customers and they're just there to have dinner, they're not really there to see comedy, right?
Yeah.
So a place like this who charges to get in, they're going to prosper because people are going to pay to get in. And unfortunately, what we do is we go around to free rooms to do comedy.
Yeah.
And we're funny as. And that's true. I've seen the both of yous perform. Yours is funny. I've seen in this room kill it.
Thank you.
Right? And other rooms. And the thing is, you go to these other rooms and they don't work as well because they're not there to pay to see comedy. But that's what we've got to do as comics to get to where we've got to go.
Well, yeah, if you've got a joke that'll work in those rooms, you know you can bring it here and it's going to fucking
go well.
Whereas if you try out jokes here and they work and you're like, oh, that was a new one, but you just laughed, you don't know really whether it's a good one or not.
Yeah, that's exactly true.
Unless you've been doing it for long enough. Like, I'm sure, like, if you've been doing it long enough, you know.
Yeah.
Without having to try it.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
at the stage I'm at, I'll write shit and I'm like, this could be funny. It might not be. It's funny to me. I just don't know if they're going to laugh.
Yeah.
And I'll try it out at an open mic. And if it goes well, then I'll try it out here.
Like, yeah, but Ethan, in the same token, what might not work there might work there.
So
what if you know yourself and you know how you write your comedy, and you know in yourself it's going to be funny because you've got a vision of all these different rooms when you're writing your stuff, where it's going to work or what kind of person it's going to work
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
So yeah, you're going, I'm writing for this room.
And
because
just back yourself, mate.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is coming from somebody who's been back in the scene for 12 months now, and I'm still struggling to get over the 5, 6, 7 minute mark. And it's because of my nerves. And that's it's really harsh. That's the harsh reality of me. It's my nerves that's killing me. Because I went through rehab in 2014, and I was in the Glen Rehabilitation Centre on the Central Coast for 22 months.
Yeah, shit, that's a long one.
Yeah, 2 months off 2 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I had a lot of demons I had to get over, and I did that. And once I got out of rehab, I fell in love, got remarried, had a shop at the entrance, driving around an Audi car, wearing gold necklaces and all that, thinking I was a T-Bob millionaire. And what happened is that went too. Like, wife left me over, running off my best mate and all that kind of jargon. And I was left with my heart, my hand. What am I going to do? I've got to do something for me, because what happened is I left rehab and I didn't have any planning there for me. I was leaving the door open for the dark side to come in and control me again. So what do I do after all that? Well, you know what? I had a lot of friends in comedy and a lot of fun. I'm going back to that.
Yeah.
And I had enough friends from the old school that were still around, like Peter Mizell, Amanda Gray, Darren Sanders, to be able to give me a shot at their rooms to give me a go. They didn't need me. I needed them, and they gave me a shot, and I'm really grateful for that, you know, and especially a lot of people up in the central, I mean, up in the Newcastle scene, like Eddie, you know, she's been absolutely terrific to me, you know, and opened doors for me to come in and trying to get back to what I was. And with, you know, I ran a show in Richmond in December, and that's my hometown of Richmond, right, where I grew up, went to school and all that.
Right.
And Richmond Theatre gave me a shot to run a comedy show there, and so I put it on there, and I got the hardest working comic in Sydney and Newcastle, or in Australia, in my opinion, Steph Broadbridge.
Yeah.
Mate.
Definitely.
You know, and I got Peter Mizell there, and I got Cabot there, you know, to help me out. And without those people, you know, I wouldn't have got the start that I really needed, you know, and I'm still getting around doing what I'm doing, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, I think that's really important to sort of hone in on. You're enjoying it. You're not there going, oh, I was, you know, such and such back 10 years ago.
Mm.
You're just like, well, this is what I want to do. This is fun. Like, and if you're having fun, it doesn't matter what happens.
Yeah. To me, it's not about the money. It's not about the prestige of anything like that, because as comics, we know in Australia, we're not going to get a lot of that.
No. You know what I mean? There's no money in it.
No, because there's no ray of flies or anything to go, you know, to strive for, you know, Australian comics are suffering bad, and that really disappoints me, because in a way of, there's a lot of great comics in this country, and the best comics you've seen that are in this country you've never seen. I'm telling you now, mate, there's funny people out there. It's just the way you market yourself and the way you put yourself out there and the way you handle yourself, I suppose.
I think, like, this club in particular, Newcastle Comedy Club, opening up, it's, at least for me, it's given me an opportunity to get in front of those bigger crowds.
Yeah.
Where I was for a long, well, I've been doing comedy nearly just over three years. And I sort of thought to myself, like, I don't think I'll ever get to a comedy club. I don't think I'll ever really get to book shows. And my goal forever was only to just get on to book shows.
Yeah.
Just to get on in front of, like, decent 60-seater, 80-seater shows.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing.
And that's what I'm doing now. So now it's a matter of, like, I've hit that goal, I've kicked that goal, and now it's about writing. It's about writing more material, building. Like my goal now is to have a 15-minute set, like a killer 15-minute set where I can go to people and say. Yeah,
because it matters. Because if you've got a killer 15-20-minute set, you can be an MC anyway.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
And yeah, you just get up there and you do your 2-3-minute thing, introduce someone to the crowd, go off, they go. You know, you go back on and do another 2-3 minutes and introduce someone else. It's great. And it's actually good fun doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like I've had the opportunity to MC here as well a couple of times. The first time went surprisingly well, like the very first time I'd ever MC'd. And then the second time, it wasn't as flash hot. Like I pulled it together in the second half of the show, but it was like one of those learning experiences, like... That's the good thing about comedy as well. There's always a lesson in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So when you're thinking back to comedy in the early sort of 2000s versus now, is there a big difference?
There is a big difference in the way of I've noticed that the crowds are a lot different. You know, they're a lot case sensitive. You know, you can't mention this and you can't mention that. Back in my days, if you want to talk about prostitutes or whatever the case may be, you can talk about whatever you want. And this is why I like these podcast shows, because you can do these things.
Yeah.
And say what you want.
Yeah.
Because the people who listen to your podcast show are actually people who want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
We don't sort of practice a lot of self-censorship here on this podcast.
Right.
Where, like, I think one of the last episodes we released was Hollywood Faggot. That was the name of the episode.
Yeah, and right.
And obviously we weren't making fun of gay people or being hateful.
That's the thing, you know, people and all this stuff about, like, gender neutral and all that sort of thing. No, I'm not going to go there. But we could talk about that sort of stuff. Like, it's back in the... We could talk about things without being shut down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It used to be back in the day, if you're offended, it was your problem.
It still is, really. It's just a society somehow have allowed people to become third-place trophy getters.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
Encouragement awards. You know, like, what's that?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you won a race in my day, you got a trophy. Second and third, you got a trophy. But now you got an encouragement award. And for me, the most embarrassing thing to stick on the mantelpiece shelf is an encouragement award.
Yeah, do better next time, is what they're saying.
Yeah. It's here you go, you're a loser. But, you know, at the end of the day, here's your trophy for being that.
Yeah.
It doesn't help you. Like, it doesn't help you. Like, growing up, the things you were proud of is, you know, if you won a race, like, Ethan grew up racing go-karts.
Yeah.
Like, you having being competitive and having a competitive edge or working towards something and being like having to deal with at a young age accepting the fact that your best wasn't good enough, as hard as that is a really, really good lesson to learn.
To be honest with you guys, I wasn't the first, second, third place trophy getter when I was a kid, and it made me who I am today. You know, I've been through 2 divorces, which is really not what I need to say here. But
there's no trophy for that one.
No, there's no. But see, it's about picking your guts up and getting on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you got a kid who's got, these days, he's got encouragement trophies on the mantelpiece. Mate, well, they're not going to learn to pick up their guts and get on it with
it. Well, that's comedy, isn't it? Like, you got to know how to bomb.
That's right.
Get back into it.
It's the hardest thing in the world to do stand-up comedy. You know, it's like the two toughest sports, I reckon, is boxing and tennis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like physical toughness sports, you know what I mean? But I'll tell you what.
Some people find that easy, though.
Yeah, well.
They're fucking hard, but you know what I mean? Like, not everyone's built for every fucking sport. There's no way I'm playing basketball.
Well, there's no toughness in boxing, mate. I'll tell you, I've done it. And getting your head punched in the head, you know, 400 times in a match, in a boxing ring, you know, it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not easy. You got to learn to duck and weave and slip and roll.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
But
fucking Mike Tyson.
We just debated that before we come on the show, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, those kids on a plane torturing the most dangerous man in the world. Yeah, you know, and he's trying to keep his mental health at his age, at a level.
Like you said, after being punched thousands of times in the head.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know. He's trying to keep his mental health at a level that's good for him to survive in a world where he's been taught to be the heavyweight champion of the world. And you got these kids on a plane trying to film him, and while one's filming him and the other one's stirring him up, like, you poke a bear long enough, mate, he's going to strike.
That's
and
the thing.
At the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned, with this thing to do with Mike Tyson on this plane, and those kids getting, all those young blokes getting pumped by him, there's an old Australian saying that we haven't heard for a long time. It's called "suck shit."
Yeah.
If you're going to poke a bear, mate,
there's the other one. It's called "talk shit, get hit."
Yeah.
It baffles my mind. There's so many people walking around with this. I'd say it's a false sense of security. I've seen Mike Tyson on podcasts. I've seen him on TV. You know, he's talked about how more reformed he is.
He is.
He is 100%. But they're probably walking into that going, well, he's not going to fucking hit me. He's not going to hit me.
I don't agree. I think that they went in going, we're going to get him to hit us.
Yeah,
on camera.
Yeah. They're probably, we don't know how long they've tortured him on that plane for, and been pains in the ass. And we don't know whether he's asked security on the plane to please get rid of these kids, do something about them, because if you don't, I will. Yeah. And I'm sure Mike Tyson would have.
Yeah.
He would have asked them, please do something about this, because if you don't, I will. I know the world that he lives in, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's either you do something about it or I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. He fucking did.
Yeah.
Man, the last person you want to get punched by.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, him and Francis Ngannou. From the UFC.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. You see it a lot, though. You'll see people who will just walk in and fucking mouth off and carry on. And it's either what Ethan said, it's the I'll get them to hit me so that I can deal with a couple of days' pain and a concussion, and I'm going to ruin this person's life.
But they've tortured the former heavyweight champion of the world. If you get punched in the head off Mike Tyson, there's a good chance you're going to get brain damage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. You're not walking away from that one with just a little bit, little scuffle. Well,
they're probably not mentally all there in the first place. If they're trying to get publicity by getting punched in the head, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Jackass, where they do shit to injure themselves to get attention.
Well, how about the Chris Rock and Will Smith stuff? Like, honestly, luckily, that wasn't me that Will Smith did that to, because he wouldn't have made it back to his fucking chair.
No, there's a lot of people that were saying that. Like, he's done it knowing, or he's done it thinking there were no consequences.
Because they have been friends for over 30 years. Like, they were both on Fresh Prince for an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like back in the day, you know, they've been family friends for a long time, you know, and I don't think, even when he walked up to do that to Chris Rock, I don't think Chris Rock actually realised that he was going to get smacked in the mouth.
No, because he was leaning forward with his hands behind his back.
Yeah, because he's from the Bronx, isn't he? A bloke like him's not going to lean forward with his hands behind his back.
Yeah, no.
I don't know, he was almost like he was on autopilot.
Yeah.
Because the way he got up and, like, I'm not saying that it's the woman's fault, but I am saying that she had something to do with it, and it was that look that she gave him.
Yeah, well,
she looked over like, what the fuck are you going to do about this? And then he was like, well, I've got to do something about it.
Yeah. I've got to.
And like you said, coming from that culture of, like, you've got to fucking do something about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah.
He's worn it now, though. Like, that was, apparently they'd asked him to leave as well, and he was like, he told him no. And the way he was acting through the night, and then towards the end, I think it all started to dawn on him. as well. And then when he won that award, I'm just like, man, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, I think it's that they're living in a different world. They're not around people who were telling them this is a bad thing to do. They're around yes men.
Yeah, you're right. But they've been in the industry long enough to know, and even with Mike doing what he did to those kids on the plane, they've been in the industry over 30 years, and they know any publicity is bad publicity. Now, for a comic, I was told by another comic by the name of Jimbo, and he used to get around years ago, and he's the funniest bloke, but he used to get kicked out of every comedy
room. It's not the guy with the goat, is it?
Yes, that's him.
Jimbo
Bazubi was a mate of mine, and he used to get kicked out of every comedy club because of his controversial...
I fucking love Jimbo, man. He's one of my favourites. Yeah.
I've been trying to find him for years, to be honest.
Yeah. He gets around a bit, but, yeah, he's never in one place. Like, no, he's always moving around.
Yeah, he pulled up at my place once, and he had 244-gallon drums on the back of a Land Cruiser full of oil that he was using to run his engines to get to Western Australia. He's pulled up at my place, and he's got out the car, and he says... I'm the only bloke that's gone through Western Australia through the desert with seagulls following his car.
just off cooking oil.
Back in the days when they were experimenting with different kind of fuels.
Yeah.
So he had an additive that did this and did that, and he was around across the country on it. I wouldn't have done it.
So especially through the fucking desert.
Yeah.
So I never get found.
Dude.
Yeah, but my point with Jimbo, just quickly, is he said, in comedy, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
No, that was the whole thing with the goat eating the flowers at Parliament House, and he went to court and shit all. Like, yeah, he got good publicity out of that. Oh,
absolutely. He got, every comedy room wanted him. It was bad, Byron as well.
Like, yeah, he was, he's got some of the funniest fucking jokes.
Oh, he is. And they're crude as.
Yeah, the one about hanging the sheet out.
Yeah.
How he fucked his missus on the... They didn't have a Japanese flag, so he fucked his missus on a rags on the bed sheet and hung it out over the balcony. So good.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's one of my favourite.
He taught me how to be crude in comedy, but I'm not willing to go there to lose my whatever fan base I may have.
Yeah.
Well, if it's not you, it's not you.
You're not talking about doing things with women's vaginas. I'm not into that. You know what I mean?
If you don't enjoy it, then you're not going to do it. The same way as someone that's like that isn't going to tell... safe jokes because they're not going to enjoy that either.
Yeah. When we get off here, I'm going to tell you a joke that he told me that I really cannot tell you is on here, but it's really funny. I'll tell you
I think I know the one, and I'm willing to tell doing, it.
Is it. Are you?
Yeah, I'll tell
you
it.
You start it, and I'll tell you if it's the right one.
All right. Hang on. How do you get a poof to the fuck
a
Sheila?
That's exactly the one.
Yeah.
How?
You're shitting a cunt.
You said it, not me.
I'll say it. I don't give a fuck.
Ethan Bentley said that, not Leon Anderson.
Well, no,
by
Jimbo. Jimbo said that. I'm stealing his joke. I'm stealing his joke, which is worse that I stole it.
Yeah.
That's exactly the one.
Yeah.
But that's his style as well. Like, that's him. He knows how to do it as well, and he can give advice on how to do it.
100%. And that's what Rodney was saying to me. That's what you've got to come out with.
Yeah.
Similar style to that. Now, we don't have to talk about doing that in women's vaginas, but that kind of punch is what we've got to come out with.
Yeah.
And then you've won the crowd. If you won the crowd, man, you've got them all night. It wouldn't matter what you said.
Yeah. I've been experimenting recently with just being quiet on stage.
Yeah.
So... you know, my opener, I walk up, I call people cuties.
Yeah,
how you going? You bunch of cuties. It immediately diffuses the crowd, and they're like, all right, this little fat dude's like a little bit weird. This might be cool. And then, like, I just stood there for maybe 10 seconds and just breathed into the mic. And then, like, I hit him with a punchline. No setup, no nothing. It's just quiet, and then a punchline. And then everyone laughs, and then I move into my set. And I'm like, that in itself, I'm like, I didn't, when I was first starting out, I was like, I didn't even realize you could use silence. Like, you can get up on stage and not say anything and build this tension.
Yeah.
And then hit them with just a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
And it hits so much harder. Like it's so much fun because everyone's like, what the fuck is he doing?
I need some water. Do you want some
water? Yeah, please.
Yeah, I'll have some water. Yeah. So like that whole like idea of I love fuck jokes as well. Like the worse the better for me.
Yeah.
And I'll be the one laughing the hardest at comics, even in a dead room. If they say something truly fucked,
yeah,
that like completely catches me off guard, like a surprise.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, I'll fucking lose my shit. I love it. I love it. And anything's on the table for me. Like I don't care what you say, who you make fun of, as long as it's funny.
Yeah.
Like if you're just genuinely trying to, not even that, it doesn't even need to be funny. As long as you're trying to make a joke.
Right.
That's where it comes down to. And I think there's a lot of crowds that don't care about the fact that it's a joke.
Yeah.
They care about what you said.
I've noticed here at this comedy club, they're more susceptible for any kind of comedy.
I think that's Newcastle good. In general.
Yeah.
Because it's still a little more regional and for the most part, there's not a lot of... The PC culture hasn't moved into the comedy crowds here is hard.
Yeah.
Obviously, thanks, if you walk up and you're making just fucked racist jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not really jokes. You're just being racist. It's not gonna fly.
That's right.
But you can say some stuff, and as long as it's funny, you can get away with quite a lot here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one thing I've noticed about Newcastle. It is susceptible for any kind of joke.
Yeah.
Funny, we're talking about before about opening scenes. The last time I'd done Wyong was a few weeks ago, and I walked on stage at the MCC. The MC said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Leon Anderson." I walked on stage, grabbed a microphone, and said nothing. The crowd started giggling and laughing.
Yeah.
So I looked up at the crowd, and they started laughing harder. So for the first 10, 15 seconds, I'd done facial expressions, you know, just do a little stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it brought the crowd down, you know. Yeah. So, and then I started my act. So
that's very like Carl Barron, how he just pulls faces. I reckon he could pull faces for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And have people cry.
Jim Owen's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's done it.
Yeah.
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 I had one here the other night, and I wish I'd recorded it. I think it was the open mic. I got up, and I don't remember what I did, but I just did something, and everyone just started laughing. I was like, what the fuck was that? Like, when you don't even know what you did, but you made them laugh.
Like, you find the hardest thing to do is do stand up in front of a room full of comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're not going to laugh at your stuff because they're judging. They're standing there looking at, you know.
Depends if they've heard it before. If I've heard it before, I'm less likely to laugh if I've heard it too many times.
I'll tell you another reason why I stepped back from comedy years ago. I did go through a problem at home, but I went down to a play at Glebe, and I'd been doing comedy for years at this stage. It was called the Roxbury Hotel, and I'd done a set one night, and there was a fella there from Byron Bay, right? And he walked up to me, right? And he ripped me a new ring off over, he reckons I was stealing jokes, other people's jokes from, and he says that you can't do that because blah, 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 you know, we make a living out of this. And I got a little bit cut, and I hadn't stolen nothing because I'll tell you now, if I stole people's work, I'd have made it a lot bigger by now.
Yeah.
Right? I'm telling you now. Right? And I never did that, and I took it quite personally because I took a lot of years writing stuff and all that sort of thing because I took I had my routine down pat for 5 years before I had the balls to get on stage.
Yeah.
And do it. And what happened is I rang up Jimbo, your mate, and told him what happened. He said, who was it? And I told him who it was. And he says, listen, I know this fella. I'll ring him up. And within 15 minutes, this bloke was on the phone full apologising that he didn't realise that I've used this stuff on a footy show and then other comics could have stolen it from me because you're in pretty much still a newcomer. I wasn't a headliner act at that stage there, you know. And this is what we've got to watch, because it does happen, guys. Being new comics, you can write good shit.
Even just the you're on the same wavelength, you're thinking the same thing.
That's right.
Like, no disrespect to Maddie at all. This was just a funny thing that happened the other night. My brother comes up the stairs and hits my brother with the same punchline I've been using on stage, which is, my brother looks like me just with a job.
Yeah, yeah.
And because with your comics, you think the same way, and she's just hitting with that. She's like, oh, you're like Ethan with a job. And I was like, have you heard my bit? Are you doing my bit? She's like, no, I've never heard you say that. I was like, holy shit, that's crazy. Like, she didn't steal it at all. She was so mortified about it. She was so apologetic. She's so good. But, like,
by this stage,
you're just thinking the same way.
I'd been running, at that stage, I was running three rooms, one at Richmond, one in Mossvale down the Southern Highlands, and one at Blacktown. And I was disheartened. I thought, you know what? I'm having dramas at home. I'm about to lose my missus and kids. I'm getting accused. I'm going out three nights a week for what I thought at that stage was no good reason. I'm going to, you know, that's it. You know, and I stopped doing comedy not long after that. And I really shouldn't have, because when I come back and spoke to Peter Mizell about it and told him what happened, he says, mate, you should never have stopped, because it happens. Mm. You know, it does, and it wasn't your fault. He says, you should have kept going, because, you know, you were on the cusp of being not a headliner back in those days, but an established comedian that could MC and
whatever you're at in comedy, it doesn't matter. Like, it's about, like, you've always got to be showing up, you've always got to be turning up.
Yeah, that's why I say before that comedy, when you're into it and you're full on into it and you've decided you're going to be a comedian, it owns you.
Yeah, yeah. And you probably didn't realise how much of a positive, when you're, like, me and Ethan both have probably struggled quite a bit over the years with mental health. I've been sort of in remission from, like, major depression for about 12 months now.
Right.
So I've been pretty good the last 12 months. And when you're in those dark, dark places, especially when I was contemplating suicide.
Yep.
The only thing I had was comedy. Like,
absolutely.
It wasn't the case.
I've been there.
Yeah, it wasn't the case. It was the only thing. I had, like, great friends. I've got a loving family.
Yep.
But it was the only positive thing that I was doing for myself that was making some difference. But when you're in it and you're in those bad moods and you're depressed, and I was turning up to comedy and just bombing, like, every single, multiple times a week for about 3 months.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things, like, I was just like, well, it's the only fucking good thing I'm doing to get out of the house and get better. But there's been plenty of times where I was like, I nearly chucked it in. I nearly chucked it in right before I got, like, I just got in my head one night and I was like, no, I'm not funny. People aren't laughing at my jokes, they're laughing at me. Like, just, like, in one of those dark, down-on-yourself moments.
Yeah.
And I was talking about it to Tanya, like, a couple of nights later, after I'd had like one of my really good sets was Cabba. He was here.
Right.
Cabba turned up and, like, I came off stage. I think you were here that night as well. Like, it was one of the best sets I'd had up until that point. And
you blew it away the night before, by the way. But
we'll talk about that another time. Yeah. But it was just like, it was one of those moments where I was like, I nearly fucking quit. Like, I nearly stopped doing it. I nearly just went, it's just not
comedy's
worth it.
Comedy's one of the things you can do where the more you do it, the more you doubt yourself that you're good at it.
Like, yeah.
Everything else, the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah, because the demon's head.
Yeah,
and the demon's head tells us to shut us down. Sorry, Ethan.
No, you're right. But, yeah, that's it's crazy that's a thing. That you, anything else that you do, the more you practice at it, the better you get. And comedy is exactly the same as anything else, but your mind tricks you into thinking that it's not.
I remember when you come off the stage that night and you were chuffed, and I did pull you aside at the end of the room up here, and I said, mate, that was absolutely great. I'm I'm blown away. I said that was great, and I pumped you up. I can't even remember what I really exactly said.
It was you and Cabba.
Yeah,
you were both like, and it was one of those moments where I was talking to Cabba about it, and I was like, oh man, I feel like I've leveled up. And he's like, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and then he's like, because Cabba has seen me perform from when I started, up until now when I'm getting booked. So like that. When you see someone who's established in the scene, like Cabba is, you and they're giving you these compliments, you're like, it's fucking amazing. And then the next week you'll go to the Crown and Anchor and bomb your dick off.
Yeah.
And it'll fucking humble you quickly as well.
Oh, big time.
It's the grand humbler.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you're bad at comedy.
No, not at all.
At the Crown. Like, everyone bombs at the Crown.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do well there with the two people.
Yeah.
Yeah, like... You got to, I don't know. Who can do well there? You got to be so good.
Kyle Legacy, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. But
but Kyle could get a laugh at a kid's party. He's natural, like.
Yeah.
And I'm led to believe that he's one of these guys that ran around for years and years and years, like, flat out.
Yeah.
You know, like Steph has, you know, and that's what it takes to be a comic, mate, because you need the stage time and the stage presence.
Yeah.
And I reckon...
Yeah, well, how many gigs did Legacy do at the Edinburgh? He got the
over
world 100. Records for it.
Yeah,
he did more gigs at that one festival than most people do in, like, 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
In one festival.
Yeah.
Fucking hard to top going. That.
Yeah. And he doesn't really write comedy as well. It's all off the cuff. It's all crowd work. Like, he'll...
And that's a natural.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah,
and even if I can, I haven't got the ability in the way of being my nerves would overrule the fact that if I could do that, you know.
Well, yeah, it's also you ever do crowd work and you throw something out there and you think it's going to be funny in the moment and it's just not, and you're like that feeling there, like. Is so much worse than writing a joke and not having it go well.
Yeah.
I'm sure it happens to him too. It happened to people who do crowd work, but they're so good at it that you don't even notice it happened. It's just on to the next
100%.
Thing.
100%. Yeah.
100%. I walked in that room, mate. Like I said, I met him the night before at that other gig. I forgot what the gig was. Can you reframe me more?
It might have been the Stag and Hunter, maybe? Yeah.
No, it was a back-to-back one up at a church.
Oh, yes, Watt Street.
Yeah, Watt Street. Yeah, and I'd only met him the night before and I heard all about this Kyle Legacy this and Kyle Legacy that. And I said to Cabba, who's Kyle Legacy? This is before we went to the church one. And he told me, and he said, mate, he said, sit back and watch this bloke. And I thought, okay. So I did. And I said, before I said that, I said to Cabba, why do they call him the king? Well, I'll tell you what. After the second night,
you're on board
at Newcastle Comedy Club. I knew exactly why they called Kyle Legacy the king.
Yeah, if you don't know now, you know.
Oh, like, I knew.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. Yeah. Oh, rate him,
dude. He's so funny. Yeah. And Cabba, man, like
that reminds me actually the whole thing with this thing. Marty was going to do that comedy course, and then there was people for some reason. Started shitting on Kyle on that, saying he's like a poor man's Nick Capper and all this shit. And
they're not like, anything alike.
They're just angry, shitty people.
Yeah.
Just fucking grubs.
Don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
They probably listen to this. Fuck you guys if you're listening. But
yeah, stop listening, cunts.
But
actually, stop listening.
I don't care if they listen or not. But it did make me fucking laugh.
Piss off.
And it made me laugh. Enough that I was like, I'm going to send this to Kyle and ruin his day. He needs to know.
Dude, there were these guys, we'll give you the context, there were guys online talking in, so they shared, there was a comedy course that was going to be going on here. It's why we were originally going to do the podcast tomorrow.
Right.
And they were just talking about, oh, who's this Kyle Legacy guy? Never heard of him.
Was he running the class?
No, okay. He wasn't. It had nothing to do with him. And then they were just like, shitting on him, saying he was the poor man's Nick Capper. But Nick Capper writes jokes. Like, he has a routine. Yeah. Like,
they don't know because they're not comedians and they don't. Yeah. They, yeah, they I don't know if those people have ever been to shows. Probably been to a few shows, but they're not comedians, so they're not here all the time watching it, so they don't know.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're at comedy, like, 2 or 3 nights a week minimum, you're not going to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be able to pick the difference.
Well, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just going to tell you that Kyle Legacy is the king of comedy in Australia at the moment. Take it or leave it. Do what you want with it. It's up to you.
Yeah, he's fucking legit. We've said it before. We're like, we don't know how he's not more famous. I think eventually it'll just come to a point where my hope is he'll just pop off.
He may need to go back to England for that to happen and then bounce into America.
Maybe.
And that's the truth, because I'm going to be honest here. Like, Australia is great for the comedy club scene, but that's what we're going to be. Comedy club, yeah. Comics.
Unless you do internet shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can do internet stuff wherever in the world. See, you can be in fucking Brazil and do internet comedy.
Yeah, this is why I'm doing the 60 seconds with Ando stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, I meant to bring that up.
Yeah.
Because I like to shine light into dark places, guys, and that's why I'm doing comedy again. It's not about money. It's not about this. It's not about that. It's about shining light in dark places. And I'm interviewing people of note variety who have done or is doing good for the community or good for the country or good for anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is why I've been getting into it, because I'm from a motorcycle racing background. Like you said, you're from go-kart. I'm from a speedway motorcycle racing background.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, there was a famous Newcastle radio announcer by the name of Rod Allen. He's been dead a long time now, unfortunately, but this man I used to sit next to in a tower at a motorcycle meeting and just listen to him all the time. And he was my idol as far as broadcasters go as a kid. And I just wanted to be like him when I was a kid. And if I'm interested in something, I can interview it. Like, you might see me do this 60 seconds Vando stuff.
Yeah, you've had rugby players, you've had comedians, you've had dirt bike riders.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I do these things. I might interview them, but I've got one take, and I might stumble a little bit when I'm doing it, but that'll only get better
because
I've
only just started. Yeah.
But I've got one take. I've got one chance of asking a person to hold a camera for me, and I've got 60 seconds to hold this person there because they've got a busy day. Usually when I do it, I see them, I know of them, or I might know them, and I'll say, listen, is there any chance we can do it? Mm. And usually 9 times out of 10, they'll do it.
Well, it's 60 seconds. Like, who doesn't have 60 seconds?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's pretty bloody good for internet stuff, because that's about the attention span of people these days. Yeah,
exactly right. With the rugby player, Mahalia Murphy, she's playing right as we speak in Melbourne for Waratahs in a grand final. But we got, so far, over 2,500 views on that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah,
nice.
You know,
yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's more than this podcast is going to get.
I done one with Graham Henry the other week, and we got on Instagram nearly 5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm having a lot of fun getting around doing it, and I'm doing on next Wednesday, I've got an old mate of mine who played for Penrith and Parramatta and Canberra back in the day by the name of Brad Drew. He's willing to do a 60 second with me next Wednesday. So I've got my gear ready to go, and it's usually just the camera and a little microphone and off I go, you know. So if I even walk down the street and I see Andrew Johns hypothetically, I'll pull him up and ask him.
Yeah.
I'll just give him a quick rundown of who I am, which is just me. But at the end of the day, you know, like, I'm a comedian getting around trying to make a name for himself again, and is there any chance we can do it?
Yeah.
I've seen you've done a lot of sort of...
Do you want another one?
Thanks.
You're all
right. You're Indigenous?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So absolutely. You're pretty big into the community around sort of supporting Indigenous people and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
I've been known to be pretty vocal as to the sort of things that Indigenous people have to go through, even way back in the past, and even now, and the fact that a lot of Indigenous people don't have the kind of they don't have the chances that a lot of people who are born in the city or just sort of general
Australians. That's why they're doing a big lot for them now, you know, the best that they can. You know, I work my full-time job at the moment now is working for Marana Aboriginal Corporation down in Richmond, and I'm a drug and alcohol facilitator at that place at the moment. And I'm working with Aboriginal people in the communities that have got issues with that sort of thing, you know. So that's really all what I do down there as far as that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've been through it, so you know how to fucking get through to people.
I'm not their counsellor, I'm the facilitator. So if somebody comes in the centre or contacts us and they've got a problem with drug and alcohol, they get a hold of me and I talk to them, and I either spear them into a meeting or I spear them into a detox or spear them into rehab.
Yeah. You're the man that figures out where they need to go.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Is there more support nowadays for that sort of stuff? Is it getting better?
It can be. They've just got to look for it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they got to, these organisations have got to get off their butts and help these people, you know, when they can.
Are there people sort of self-referring for services and stuff like that, or a lot of people just sort of falling into stuff, and it's not until they're in trouble that they're really referred for these services?
Well, that's right. That's it, right. It's not until they, you know, really need the services. Look, in all honesty, guys, I can talk on behalf of it with the drug and alcohol facilitating side of it, but all that other side of it, I'm not, you know, there's other people that really are better to talk to about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think there's much, I can't remember his name now. There's a bloke who lives out near Maitland who's come in for a couple of shows. I think he's one of the elders out that way. Absolutely hilarious, though.
Oh, Legacy.
Oh, comic.
What's
his
name?
Who, sorry?
He's a comic, is he?
Yeah, he's a comic.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, though. We'll have to...
It's Dale, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've forgotten his name. But, yeah, he doesn't come out and do gigs much, but he always does a gig when Kyle's in town. Kyle gets him to come out and...
Yeah,
he brings the whole mob with him. It's
really?
Yeah.
Good on him. I
think it's Dale Vernon, maybe. But he...
But he's a friend of Kyle's, is he?
Yeah, and one time we're at the Kent, and he's like, he's headlining. He does like 15 minutes at the end.
He's an established comic, is he?
Yeah. And he's like doing this gig, and he's going to put his false teeth in a schooner glass.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's like the beer's still in there, but he's dropped it in and he smashed his teeth. He's like, fuck.
Wow.
This gig just cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's the only bloke I know that could smash his own teeth out.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think there's much of, like, do you think if you tried to get more sort of like Aboriginal people into comedy that it'd work? Like, do you think?
Absolutely. There's definitely a market for it, but they've got to want to come in and do it. They're the ones that got to recognise themselves if they're comics to come in and do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, but there's a lot of... Most Aboriginal people I know, they're funny. No worries about that.
They're funny, yeah.
Oh, they're really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. If there is anyone out there listening right now, come to comedy. Come to Newcastle Comedy Club. Look up Face Comedy on Facebook, Free and Affordable Comedy and Entertainment. Is that what it stands for? Face? I don't know. Sorry, Eddie. Yeah, come in.
Free and Affordable Comedy events, I think.
Events, yeah. Come out to comedy, because it's one of those things that will actually change your life. It will, but you've also got to understand that you're going to bomb your dick off for a long time.
That's what turns most people away.
Yeah. If you come to a Stag and Hunter though, and you want to have a good first set, Stag and Hunter's probably
reminds me. Fuck. We're at the speaking of the Crown Anchor the other night. There's this guy there, and he wants to try comedy for the first time. At the Crown and Anchor, and he's never done it before. And he's like, over talking to Adam and Eddie. And he's like, how do I get on? Like, what do I have to do? And they're like, yeah, just write your name on and you can give it a go. And I'm kind of like, oh, don't don't put him up here, but he's don't do this to him, his first ever gig. But no, he did. He got on, and the dude did like 15 minutes. He wow. just kept going. He's just like, just talking. I'm like,
yeah.
holy
yeah, but
shit.
Was he funny?
No, it was his first time ever. He was
yeah,
terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's got 15 minutes in him.
Yeah, he does. And he just wasn't stopping. It was crazy. Yeah, he's just telling stories and stuff like that. He was sort of like, probably like, yeah, it might have been like early 30s. He was just, yeah, kept going. Yeah, plenty to talk about. I've seen that happen a few times. People get up for their first time and they just get it all out and then they never come back.
It's funny you say that because I ran the comedy rooms in the late 2009 and all that, you know. And what I used to do, if there was a mouth out in the audience, I used to say, oh, how you going, mate? I'll say, you think that you can do stand-up comedy, do you?
Yeah.
I'll say, and he goes, oh, yeah, yeah. And they're usually a bloke standing with a skewy in their hand.
Yeah, all right, you're on the list.
Yeah. And I'll say, you're pretty funny at work around
your
the
mates.
Burying your mates. Yeah. Pretty funny in a pub around the piss air table, are you, mate? He goes, yeah, yeah. I'll say, what do you reckon, ladies and gentlemen? How about we get him on? And I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. I say, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to stage, Penis Breath. So he comes up on the stage. They usually come up on the stage and they go, here we go. Or off you go. And then they say, oh, yeah. Well, and they're trying to tell a joke and they're bombing. And I say, you had enough, mate? He goes, yeah. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, there goes Penis Breath.
Yeah.
It's not easy, is it, mate?
Yeah.
No.
I will never, ever give him the mic, though, in that circumstance. Never ever give him the mic.
I would like him.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because it's going to derail the
because
show.
Because it sends a message back to the crowd that if you want to be a mouth,
you're
going to get called up. You know, no one likes to be put on the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get away with that in an open mic.
No, this wasn't an open mic, mate.
This is a book gig.
Yeah. Fair dinkum
gig. My fear there is if you've got like a good show where each comic is building on the momentum of the next, you bring a heckler up and they make the crowd uncomfortable and they bomb and then you've got to...
See, that's when I understand exactly what you're saying and you're right. That's up to the MC. Like when I done it, I warmed the crowd back up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. If you're willing to repair it.
You don't let your mate who's about to come back, who's about to come on, die.
Yeah,
and that's the one way of letting them die. You know, like you've got to, as an MC, you've got to pump the crowd, and you've got to keep their enthusiasm flowing. Mm. You see Kyle do it all the time.
Yeah,
he'll talk for. I'll rate the bloke.
Yeah,
yeah.
We saw this. It was the same thing, right here. It was a second Saturday show, I think, second Saturday or Friday show, and it was like probably 50% capacity. So you had like the front row here, probably filled in, and then like patchy people towards the back.
Yeah,
and then there was a bloke sitting like right there, there.
Yeah.
Fucking heckled me and like was just a problem. And not even like friendly heckling. You know, you'll get hecklers, and I'm guilty of this in the past as well, of like trying to help the show. You're just engaging with the comic on stage. Maybe they're doing crowd work and stuff like that. This guy was like calling me a dickhead and all sorts of stuff. And I was just like, I was like, dude, you paid money. You paid money to come here and you're ruining the show.
Yeah.
But Ben got him up on stage and then gave him a mic.
Mm-hmm.
The bloke fucking bombed.
Yeah.
And Ben's like, yep. Fucking a little bit harder than you think, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then just sat him up there while he just felt uncomfortable in the crowd, and then eventually let him off stage. You shut the fuck up after that.
Yeah, well, point taken. What I said before.
Yeah.
Exactly what you did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it was high risk.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we had the exact same thing at Wonji as well. Bloke who wanted to...
Back in my day, I remember doing a gig down Moss Vale, and there was a couple of hecklers in the crowd. And I said to him, oh, you think it's easy up here, do you, mate? They go, yeah. I says, mate, I don't go down to your job and heckle you while you're trying to work, do you?
Yeah,
I said, you don't see me go down to King's Cross kicking sailors' cocks out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. The one at Wonji, we had this bloke try and get up, and he he was like, oh, I just want to have a go. Yeah. He just thought it was an open mic. I was like, nah, dude, like, we're like, we've worked at this. Like, we've actually put time and effort and money into building our fucking set. We finally get an opportunity to come to a show and we're getting paid to put a show on by the council. Right. And you just think you can jump up, never been on stage before, and do what we do.
Absolutely fuck the show because you're fucking 20 beers in.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Yeah. That's like you were saying, if they're going to be uncomfortable, you kind of want to make them uncomfortable and give them an understanding that this is hard to do. But if someone's that plastered that they don't even fucking know
but that's up to the venue to come up and tap him on the show and say, okay, mate, your time's up, mate. You're out of here, mate.
Yeah.
Like, that's up to the venue. Whoever's running the bar, what occurs?
Yeah, because he just walked up on the stage and just pretty much just grabbed the mic off Eddie. He was like, "Oh,
are you serious?"
Yeah.
Well, not being a hero, but he's lucky I wasn't there because I would have frog marked the fuckhead off the stage.
Yeah.
That's complete disrespect. One to a comic, two to a woman.
Yeah.
Two things I do not like.
Yeah.
Disrespect to a woman.
Yeah, it was absolutely fucked.
Especially a class act like Eddie. She's a lovely person and a great comic.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so, like, and then was walking up afterwards and trying to defend himself about it. I just had
there's to... You can't defend yourself from that, mate. You're a dickhead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hasn't been to an open mic either. No. I was like, if you want to do it, mate, come to an open mic. Haven't fucking seen him. No. Never will.
Mm. No. Was talking shit after the show. Been like, I laughed three times. Like, I could hear him when I was at the bar, and I was like, oh, God, you're a fuckhead, mate. Like, every comic got up and was
that
doing
a free
well.
Gig?
It was a free gig for them, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the problem.
Yeah.
If they're running free gigs, that's what you're going to, that's what's going to happen, mate.
It was put on, like, for the most part, I would say it was put on really, really well. They had their own stage set up, the lighting was good, the sound was pretty okay. But I don't know if you've ever been to Wanji Pub before or Wanji Tavern.
No, I haven't.
So you walk in, you walk past the playground, and then you turn right, and then there's like a corridor with the bar there.
Yeah, right.
And then it opened up into like the main room, which is usually probably a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah.
But what the problem was is not everyone in the bar was there to see a comedy show.
They
were just talking halfway through. So I'd love to go back though. People who turned up and were listening to the show and like they were good. And I tend to sort of do better in those sort of rooms. Like the more bogan it is and the more country, like because of my self-deprecating humor, it goes down well in those pubs. In those country pubs, they fucking hate cunts who they perceive as up themselves.
Yeah, right.
Like, come from clever. Yeah,
you trying
to be clever.
Self-deprecating humor.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and if you say the word self-deprecating humor, that's too many syllables. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We usually do a segment at the end where we just talk about stuff that we're thinking about writing or taking up on stage. You know, like the writing group that we do with Eddie. Like, if you've had any ideas floating around your brain that you want to just chuck out there, we'll talk about that, and then we'll wrap it up. So, I wrote a bit yesterday actually about it's pretty rough, but it's about how I reckon black people are cool because they can make white names that are shit sound good. Like, if they've got that name.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, Wesley, as a white dude, you'd be like, oh, I don't want to hang out with Wesley. But Wesley Snipes is fucking Blade. That's cool.
Yeah.
Morgan?
Yeah.
Shit. White man named Morgan? Crap. Morgan Freeman? Awesome. I want to hang out with him.
Yeah.
I'll just Curtis?
Yeah.
Shit white name?
Yeah.
Curtis Mayfield? Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the idea. But, I got to somehow, like, put a punchline in there or something. I was going to do Steve. I was going to be like, oh, unless you got a name like Steve, like, I don't know any cool black people named Steve. And then you're like, oh, wait, Steve Harvey's pretty fucking, he's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got one I'm doing at the moment where I'm trying to write stories about my time in defence and when I was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
I've got, like, story about old Mad Dog, who was just this fucking crazy old dude who just went insane.
As
the years progressed and we were watching Mad Dog, he just got crazier and crazier. I've got the story about, I don't know if I've already talked about this on the podcast, one chick who used to just overreact to everything you said, like, wow.
Yeah, you have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She went off and bought a crocodile. Yeah, and I'm just trying to fucking really... My biggest goal at the moment is just taglining my set now.
Yeah.
Adding taglines. So I've been slowly starting to do that. My new airplane bit, the old airplane bit, I've got new taglines for, which is funny. What about you, Ando? You got any new bits that you're working on, mate?
Oh, stuff around caving, you know, like going into a toilet the other day and I went, you know, to the dispensers and I'd stand there for 5 minutes pumping the thing, trying to get some soap out and then realise that it was hand sanitizer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's another one that goes, but see, I'll work on them and then work for them. It's not just off the cuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Gotta put the work in once you got the idea.
Yeah. I've been doing a little bit of comedy up at Katoomba with Amanda Gray, and she lets me come up there if I've got something to say, you know. But I went down to Katoomba Three Sisters, and I went into the kiosk there, and they're selling boomerangs, that's right. And being an Aboriginal fella, I thought I'd buy one. It's all painted up, and I took it down to Echo Point, and I threw it in thinking it was going to come back, but now it's laying at the bottom of Echo Point somewhere.
That was made by a white person, that boomerang.
Yeah, that one was made by, exactly.
Yeah.
You're in the raft. Did you surf out at Richmond?
I did.
How long?
Only 3 months. It was right at the end of my time, yeah. Right. But I was out at Raft Base Richmond for a little while.
Yeah, drive past there every day.
Yeah, it's a... Honestly, it was the best 3 months of my career because I was discharging. I'd already made the decision and put my paperwork in.
Yeah, right.
So there was nothing anyone could do or say to me.
So Richmond was your exit plan?
Yeah, well, it was just... Well, it was good because they give you an apartment on base.
Yeah,
you
right.
You don't have to pay anything, really. Like, food's all covered, rent's all covered. And then I just spent... It was funny. I was in the military and then I spent 3 months playing a military simulator and not actually working in the military.
Really? Yeah,
I was
just
playing video games the whole time.
Oh, that's right. That's
It's fucking awesome.
Right. I heard there's one that is going there and practice at Richmond where you can sit in and actually it's like...
They got full flight sims and stuff like that. Yeah, I've been in a... I did not the one at Richmond. I did a flight sim at Williamtown.
Yeah.
Where they'll fucking, it's like a big screen that comes over you. You get to fly around Newcastle. I flew under Stockton Bridge. I learned how to land a fighter plane, take off, went and bombed Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Oh, that's top.
Yeah, yeah. It was
just
a lot of fun.
Just all the things you want to do as a kid, you know?
Yeah, it was fucking so much fun.
Yeah.
It's funny too, because when we did it, if you're standing next to someone while they're in the cockpit, the screen's moving around.
Yep.
So your visual horizon changes
Your
body will try and match it. So people will sway. You'll nearly fall over if you're not careful.
If you was actually in a plane and the pilot snuffed it and they say, is anyone on the plane that can fly a plane, can you land that motherfucker?
Probably not.
Yeah,
probably
right.
not. I did it in the simulator and
you've done it in an F-111.
Yeah, well, not an F-18. F-18. Yeah. I managed to land the F-18. I think if I understood the controls, I had access to the air brake, rudders, and I knew the landing speed and all that.
Yeah,
I might be able to do it. Probably would still crash though.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because it's But that's my little story.
Helicopters.
I've been on a Black Hawk.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was cool. Got to fly around Newcastle, the Black Hawk with the doors open, like pretty much 90 degrees.
Oh, that would have been mad.
Flying over the water.
Shoot me pants.
Yeah, I got a little joy flight. I got a little joy flight on the search and rescue helicopter up in Townsville as well.
What about Richmond? Did you get it? Because when they take off at Richmond, right, they head towards the Blue Mountains.
Yeah.
And they turn right. Right?
Yeah.
I reckon down in those valleys that no man goes, right, I reckon, and they fly through them. I've heard pilots from Richmond tell me that what it's like. He says just thousands of kilometres, just heaps and heaps of kilometres of untouched territory. You know what I mean? And they say the wildlife that you see through there is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, you would. You would.
So you just take off from Richmond and they go head towards the mountain, and if, before they get right at the top, they turn right and they go right through those gullies.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway.
They'll do the tack flying where they'll practice you trying to stay as low under the radar as possible.
Yeah.
And they'll do like night flying, and it's literally one guy's there watching for power lines right. and the other guy's flying. So they'll just be like, oh, power line.
Yeah.
Get some altitude. Then straight back down into it.
There's an American plane that comes in every day, and you know when it's coming. You could be anywhere in Richmond.
Yeah.
And I'll know that that's that American plane.
Yeah.
And even they all come in around 10:30, not the American planes, but other planes. I don't know where they're coming from, but usually during the week, 10:30 at night, they start coming in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I lived in, like I say, I lived in Richmond and over the flight path. So you hear them. You know, yeah. coming through to land.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going every day, but they come home at 10:30.
Yeah, it's all just practice. They're just going up, they're doing certain missions. The planes I was working on were like the mini Hercs, the Spartans they're called.
Yeah.
And they were made by the Italians, and they don't have the best build quality, unfortunately. And their fucking manuals are all translated from Italian as well.
I grew up in a place called Castlereagh, which was in between Penrith and Richmond.
Yep, I know that way.
Right?
Yeah.
And on a speedway complex, actually, called Nepean Raceway. And my parents were the caretakers, and I lived there as a kid. Anyway, long story short, it's right a kilometre through the bush adjacent to the bush is the drop zone.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like most weekends you'd see them dropping Jeeps.
Yeah.
You know, soldiers, whatever, you know, always practicing out there, you know. But I never ever, I know they landed out there on the dirt, but I've never seen it happen myself.
Yeah, apparently, I'm not sure how much of this I can talk about, totally honest.
Well, let's just.
The more I think about it, let's wrap it up.
This is a comedy show.
We're
talking about the Air Force.
Yeah.
That's how it happens.
Before you start, I've got one thing for you guys, and I've had it for a couple of weeks, and I've been dying to give it to you. You ready for it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I was
like, what is that? I threw a rubber snake thinking I'd scare the shit out of him. It backfired on me.
No, the fat man
caught
it.
Not very funny.
I thought it was food.
That's funny, yes. You've got to snap it, neither.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Back to the comedy drawing board for me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Check out 60 Seconds with Ando.
Yep.
Leon Anderson, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You on Twitter?
TikTok.
All the places, check out How to Not Comedy on Facebook. Check out Ethan Bentley Comic on Instagram.
At Bentley Comic. And check fucking open mics next Tuesday at the Comedy Club in Newcastle. Wednesday is the Wicco, next Wednesday. Yep. And Thursday, I believe, is the Star Hotel.
Ooh,
beautiful. Check them out.
Big
sensational.
Week. All right, see you later.
Thank you.